The fifth reading of Parshas Yisrei details Matan Torah. It opens with the preparations, the things that Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jewish people to do in order to prepare for the actual giving of the Torah. And then we hear about the general scene. And just before the Torah was given, we hear about lightning and thunder. And that will be the focus of today's class. We're going to pick it up in the middle of the fifth reading. Perek Yutes, chapter 19. We're going to go to verse 16. Vayihi bayem ha-shlishi. And so it was on the third day. This is the third day of their preparation, the sixth day of Sivan. Bihiyes ha-baker. As morning dawned, the Torah says, "Vayehi koilois uverokim." There were lightning and thunder. The onon kaved and a heavy cloud, al hahor on the mountain. The koil shofar chazok ma'id and a very powerful, piercing, loud blast of the shofar. Vayecherad kol ha'om asher b'machane, the entire nation who was in the camp trembled. So it's the third day, which means that the people of Israel have done all the preparations that are necessary. They're primed and ready. And b'hiyeis ha-boker, just as day is dawning, Rashi tells us means, melamed shehigdim al yodam, that God, this teaches us that God came before. And that's why it says first, v'yihi keilos uvrokim, first there was all this lightning and thunder. And then Moshe Rabbeinu went to bring the people. He brought them to God. As we read in the next verse, in verse 17 it says, Vayetze Moshe Esa'om l'kras olikim. Moshe then brought, he led the people out of the camp towards the divine presence, towards God. Vayisyatzvu b'tachti sahar. In verse 17 we hear of them taking their places at the foot of the mountain. So when it says, B'hiyeis ha-boker, as day was dawning, what this tells us is that God appeared, if you will, on Mount Sinai before the people had arrived. Masha'ein derech basav adam lasis kein. This is not the means of your typical king of flesh and blood, a mortal king. Shehei harav mamtin l'talmud, that the senior, that the master should wait for the disciples. V'chein matzinu b'yecheskel. We find something similar in the prophecies of Ezekiel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, Kum tzei el habika, come out onto the plains. And then it says, I will speak to you. Va'akum ve'etze el habika, and Yechezkel comes out into the plain. Ve'hine sham kved Hashem oimed, and he sees the presence of God, so to speak, waiting for him. So this is a precedent. And this is how it was with mass revelation. And it's pretty clear that that's how it was also on a personal level. When God revealed himself to the individual prophets, that we see at least one other example where Hashem waited, and then the people, or the person, the prophet came. And I suppose this emphasizes the humility of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God doesn't put on any airs, doesn't have to impress anybody. You know, when you meet the prime minister, I can tell you from experience, you wait. The whole story with the prime minister, it's hurry up and wait. And the moment he appoints the prime minister, it doesn't matter. He's never on time. And you always have to be on time. And everybody waits. And that's how they create the aura. That's how they create an image. Everybody's waiting and waiting, and you have to wait a little more. And then, finally, he comes. And even when, or if he would be on time, everybody else had to be there early. So the nature is that the crowd waits, and then the master comes. But not so with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's really all Rashi gives us on verse 16. I'm sorry? Who is blowing the shofar? That's a good question. Sorry. No, it's a very good question. I suppose you'll say God. God's causing the shofar. He doesn't have to hold the shofar. He doesn't have lips and he doesn't have lungs, right? But God is causing the sound of the shofar. So what do we need the kolos of brachim? What do we need this lightning and thunder for? What was all this fire and fury for? So Rashi doesn't really explain that. But the truth is, that's not Rashi's mandate to give us neither sermons nor mystical insight. Rashi's self-imposed mandate is pshuto shel mikra. He's got to tell you, explain the verses to you. This is what happened. And why was it at Mount Sinai? And why was it the smallest mountain or the biggest mountain? And why was it in the Sinai desert? Rashi doesn't deal with that. Because that's what it is. Here's what the verses. If it would say bitachti sahar, and that means at the foot of the mountain, but it all sounds like underneath the mountain, well, Rashi has a mission then. He has to explain to you why the Torah uses this kind of verbiage or terminology, which seems to be out of sorts. Were they under the mountain? Well, we're going to find out they actually were under the mountain to some degree, at some point. But why there was lightning and thunder is really not Rashi's thing, but many of the other Mefarshim talk about it. The Sefarno invokes a verse that says, Eretz Rasha, Af Shamayim Notfu. The earth trembled as the heavens dripped. So, okay, yes, that's what David HaMelech says in Tillim, and indeed it is so, the earth trembled, but doesn't really explain, so why was this the case? And what exactly was it? I would suppose that Rashi feels that everybody knows what Koilus Ubrakim are. Everybody knows that that it means loud sounds. Loud sounds. So there was thunder. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that Koilus is thunder. Ubrakim is the way it sounds, lightning. So this was a very intense setting where they saw lightning. I don't know if it's lightning we see today or not, but we could presume it was. And they heard loud sonic thunder booms. Rabbeinu Chananel says that the thunder that they heard was the voices of the angels. They heard the thunderous singing of angels. And this happens every morning. We just don't usually hear it. And on that day, we became privy to a reality that humanity is, as a rule, totally oblivious to. This could be metaphorized in a very simple way. This room now is filled with radio waves. And if you have the right transistor, you can pick up a broadcast from the Far East. You could pick up a broadcast from the North Pole. Anywhere a broadcast is coming from, that you can pick it up. It's here. If it wasn't here, no transistor in the world could create it. You have to be tuned into the right dial. If you're tuned into the dial, then all of a sudden the sounds come alive. So the Jewish people, or for that matter all of humanity, is as a rule not tuned into the various sounds that are emanating at all times. And this is a very real thing. There is thunderous singing of the angels. The Jewish people became aware of that. All of Torah is true, but to say that's pshuta shel mikra, vayhi koilus uvrakim, that this was referring to the thunderous singing of the angels, seems like a far stretch. On the level of pshuta shel mikra, it seems that there was some kind of thunder and lightning. This was a real serious show, as Rabbeinu Bechaya says. And how did the people react? They trembled. It says, Vayecher et kol ha'am asher b'machaneh. So very interestingly, the Ibn Ezra says that it's important for you to know that the trembling was not from the lightning and thunder. The trembling, he says, was from the shofar. And he says, the Ibn Ezra says, that there was nothing more wondrous than the sound of the shofar. And actually, they'll let you ask that question. Who blew the shofar? The shofar blew. But here's the thing. Usually, when a person blows a shofar, it gets weaker and weaker and weaker until at some point it ends. Here, the sound of the shofar got stronger and stronger and stronger. And this is impossible to fathom. It just doesn't add up. And therefore, it was totally unearthly. It's an unearthly sound. They knew it was the sound of a shofar, but it was off the charts. And you know, there's a verse that says, Hayitaka shofar be'ir v'lo yecharad. Will the shofar be sounded in the city and it doesn't cause trembling? There's something about the sound of the shofar that makes us tremble. And you know, month of El comes and the shofar sounds. It's a jarring sound. It somehow, it gets through to us. And because of the unique sound of the shofar, and because of the unique nature in which the shofar was sounded, that there was this kol shofar that was chazak ma'oid. And I want you to know that the kol shofar is mentioned a number of times over here. In verse 13, Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't touch the mountain. Don't go near the mountain. B'mshech ha'yoyvel. Only when the sound of the shofar ends. That's when you can approach the mountain. So even before we have a sound of a shofar, already we have Moshe Rabbeinu saying that that'll be the sign that the mountain is available and everybody can touch the mountain. And if you take a look in verse 19, which is the final verse of the fifth reading, it says, not about lightning and thunder, but again, it emphasizes, Vayihi kol ha-shofar hoylach v'chazak me'od. The sound of the shofar was continuing and getting stronger and stronger. And then we hear, Moshe yadaber v'hoi alikim ya'anenu v'kel. Moshe was speaking, and God was amplifying his voice. So the fact is that the shofar is mentioned no less than three times in the fifth reading, and it's mentioned later on as well. Whereas the kodesh of rakim are mentioned only in verse 16. So the Ibn Ezra says, the vayecherat kol ha'am, it is true that the nation trembled, but take a look at the verse. It was the third day, day was breaking, and there was lightning and thunder, it was a heavy cloud, and v'kol shofar chazak ma'od. And after this it says vayecherat. So it says vayecherat, not after the lightning and thunder, but the yecherat was after the sound of the shofar. Ramban says that this vayecherat, this pachad, this was an experiencing of the dread or the awe or reverence that Yitzchak Avinu, that our father Isaac lived with. We know that Yaakov Avinu, when he speaks about God, he speaks about God of my grandfather, God of Abraham, and he says God of Isaac. Isaac was still alive, and therefore he didn't want to say God of Isaac, because Eina Kadosh Baruch Hu Miyachet Shmuel Tzadikim Michayim. God does not say God of when somebody is still terrestrially alive, because, so to speak, terrestrial life is always... it's always a mystery. We don't know what tomorrow brings. And a person can be the greatest tzaddik, and tomorrow could turn out to be a tzaddik at all. And things like that happened in Jewish history. There was a Kohen Gadol who served for decades, and then became a heretic in the end. So when God says God of, that's only when life has, so to speak, the terrestrial life has come to an end. The possibilities of right and wrong, righteous or the opposite, no longer exist. That's when God says God of. And there's a discussion as to why with Yitzchak Avinu it's different. Partly because Yitzchak was blind and he was no longer engaged with the material world. And we know when it comes to sin, it speaks about the idea of your eyes see and then your heart lusts the desires. Yitzchak couldn't see anymore. Paskim v'nei Yitzhara, it says he no longer had what we would call an evil inclination or the reality of the material world to get in the way. And therefore, God could, so to speak, say, Elikei Yitzchak. Yaakov used those words. However, he doesn't say Elikei, he says Pachad Yitzchak, the dread, the awe, the overwhelming reverence of Yitzchak. And it says that they came to a point of awe and reverence for Hashem, not in a way that could be articulated, but it could only it could be given voice, but not words. We know that when people feel a very, very intense moment, they scream, they shout, they yell, they may make noises, but they can't actually express themselves in words. And this is why moments of great sadness, moments of great joy, people sometimes make noises, but they don't have words. People say, I have no words. I can't express myself. This is how the Jewish people felt at the time. It's interesting that they tell this. I saw various versions of this. Reb Chaim of Tzanz, he used to pray to experience the Yiras Shamayim of the Rambam. There are fools who speak about the Rambam in terminology of, you know, open-mindedness, and the Rambam was, so to speak, a rationalist. We don't hear him writing about Kabbalah, which is true. The Rebbe Marash said that the Rambam was a big mekubal, but his generation wasn't worthy of him revealing Kabbalah. He was very careful not to speak in all the mystical terms, and the Rambam could have brought the highest levels of spiritual Torah teaching down to the level that ordinary people would be able to understand it rationally, much like Chassidus does centuries later. But his generation wasn't worthy. Anyway, so Reb Chaim of Tzanz, Chassidim, of course, have a very different approach, treat the Rambam with the greatest of reverence and awe. He used to daven every day that he should experience the Yiras Shamayim, the awe that the Rambam felt for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the story is told that one day, one evening, as he was going to retiring at night and saying Kirish Mishalamita, saying the final Shema, he experienced Reb Chaim of Tzanz. He experienced the Yiras Shamayim of the Rambam. And he said when this came upon him, he fell to the ground and he was in such awe, such reverence that he couldn't move. The feeling was so intense that he was unable to move. And he prayed that it should be taken from him because he couldn't function with that. And that was the level of that the Rambam functioned with. The level of the Rambam's awe for Hashem and his reverence for Hashem's Torah was so overwhelming that a great tzaddik like Reb Chaim Tzanz couldn't suffer it. He couldn't deal with it. It was too intense. maybe this is what the Ramban means when he talks about the idea of the pachad. That's what it was, vayechrat kol ha'am, that the response of the Jewish people was they felt such a profound awareness of God's presence that all they could do was tremble, being totally overwhelmed. So we don't see that it was the lightning and thunder. None of the Rishonim seem to talk about the lightning and thunder, and that was the reason for the trembling. I mean, the Chizkuni comes closest. He says that the voices and the sounds that they heard all made them aware of the fact that God was waiting for them. And that freaked them out. That was Vayecherat, when they became aware. But it wasn't the lightning and thunder per se. It was all of this contributed to them becoming aware of the fact that God was there waiting for them. Which brings us back to the question, so who needed lightning and thunder? Like, who ordered the fireworks? Who needed it? So the Rebbe talks about this, thankfully. And he offers us some very interesting insight into the lightning and thunder. I'm going to direct you to the Biurim book, page Ayin Zayin. Rebbe begins with the question, straight up. Yesh Lisho. Okay, let's just ask the question. Ma hoysa matarosam shel hakolis v'habrokim shebematan Torah. Okay, why did this happen? Well, what really was the point of having the lightning and thunder during the mass revelation at Sinai when the Torah was given? B'hashkafa rishayna, at first glance, nohog lefarash, it's common for people to kind of try to explain this. Shehakolis v'habrokim, that the lightning and thunder, noyadu le'oirer yira v'charoda b'libam shobrei Yisrael. This is how people tend to speak about Matan Torah. There was lightning, there was thunder, and the people were overwhelmed. They were in a state of awe because of lightning and thunder. Here's the little problem. We just look into the Rishonim, and they don't speak about that. The Rishonim do not speak about the charoda as being the result of lightning and thunder. Clearly, that's not how the Ibn Ezra understood it. It's not how Ramban understood it. It's not even how the Chizkuni understood it. And he comes closest by saying that lightning and thunder made them aware of God's presence. So being aware of God's presence. Okay, so why did God have to make them aware of his presence through lightning and thunder? Hadavar tamua. V'chihagili ho'eliki haniskav atzmai. Was not the incredible, the extraordinary level of divine revelation that was experienced, was that not enough to bring them to a state of awe and reverence? Let's go back to the little story I told you about the Chaim of Tzanz. There was no lightning or thunder. He felt the awe that the Rambam used to feel. In his heart, he felt the feeling that the Rambam used to feel, and he couldn't move. The Jewish people experienced revelation. They knew God. I can't tell you what that means. I never experienced it. Soon Mashiach will come. We'll all know what that means. In the same way, a blind person will never be able to understand the meaning of seeing or the difference between violet and purple or even yellow and blue because he never saw colors. He has no frame of reference. The deaf person who never heard can never appreciate the sounds of the symphony. He'll never know what that means. He can hear vibrations. He relates to it. He doesn't really understand why people love music. He never heard anything. I'm not talking about somebody who once heard and then, God forbid, lost the ability. I'm talking about somebody who never had the ability to hear. It's just impossible to imagine what it is. We have no frame of reference whatsoever. Zero, nil. Seeing a sunset, seeing an extraordinary event, a tornado, is not the presence of God. That's the might of nature. It's the hands of God, if you will. It's not the presence of God. So seeing God wasn't good enough. If you needed to have charada, awe, that wasn't enough. You know, Shimshon, Hagibor's father, Manoach, when he saw an angel, he was overwhelmed. He couldn't even speak. Shemesh's mother could handle it. She was on a higher level. There was no light and there was no thunder. Just saw an angel. And I'm pretty sure if one night some kind of creature appears to you from another world, you'll be in a state of fright too. It doesn't even have to be an angel. It'd be some kind of ghost, I don't know, some spirit that's unhinged, unencumbered with a material reality. It'd freak you out. You'd be in a state of charoda. So, what with the fireworks? So the Rebbe looks at this in a totally different fashion. He rotates this 360 degrees. He says, it's not that somebody ordered fireworks to impress anybody. Instead, the Rebbe says, it must be that the lightning and the thunder was the natural result of what was happening. It's like when a person wants to think, oftentimes what happens to the forehead? The forehead wrinkles. That's what a person wants to think, that's what happens. So if a person's forehead doesn't wrinkle, could he not think? No, it's just the reality is that the mind is a magnificent thing. We don't fully understand it, but somehow when there's muscle activity, which is what the mind is, when's going on in the head, so oftentimes it expresses itself also in the skin outside of the head as well. But it's not that the wrinkling of the forehead makes you think or makes you wise. It's that brain activity, cerebral activity, will sometimes express itself or cause a reaction in the epidermis that surrounds the mind or the brain. Your elbow will not wrinkle when you think, guaranteed. Because it's not about wrinkled skin. And having many wrinkles doesn't make you necessarily wiser. The lightning and the thunder was not, let's order some fireworks. Let's make this really exciting. Bring in the lights, the camera, the action. Let's freak him out. No, not at all. Chas v'shalom. What would be the point of that? God has to impress us. Elohim hayu teitzos tivius. This was the natural result, the symptom of gilui eloki sheba matan Torah. There was divine revelation at matan Torah. The result was, the natural result, the natural symptom was that you had lightning and thunder. What does this mean? Yuduim divrei ha-medrash. Famous words of the Medrash Tanchuma, which we've repeated so many times. Shelefnei matan Torah, that before the giving of the Torah, chola ha-gzeira, there was this decree. And the decree was, in the words of our sages, al-yoinim le-yerdu le-tachtoinim. The higher level, the higher realm, the loftier existence, it doesn't make its way to the lower nether world. This is a decree. There's this wall, so to speak. And tachtoinim le-yalu, those on the bottom, they're not going up. Which is not about floors and going up in an elevator. It's about a loftier idea, a higher level of music. You don't climb stairs to get there. But at the time when the Torah was given, his batla gzeirazu, this decree, this natural division between the supernal and the mundane and ordinary, it dissipated. It just was taken away. And this is this happened first and foremost through God's descent. God is called the highest of the high, El Yoinim, the highest form of El Yoinim. And it came on Har Sinai, which was a mountain, an outcrop of physical earth, material earth, or stone, representing Tachtonim. In other words, now, La Mita Shel Davar, let's talk about this in truth. Hakesher ben El Yoinim v'Tachtonim hayakaya me'azu me'elum. The connection between the spiritual reality and the material reality never really stopped. How could it stop? You know the famous words of the Medrash, Ein lecha kol esav ve'esav she'ein lo mazal b'mayla. You have no blade of grass. There's no smallest amount of vegetation that isn't linked to a spiritual force or alter ego that's constantly making it exist. She'makabai. Makabai literally sounds like it's hitting it, but it's more like when there's a, you know, When your cell phone is in the place of good reception, you know, it'll show you like these bars going out. So there's a constant connection between the towers, between the broadcast, and between the transistor or however the technology works. That means it's constantly broadcasting. It's constantly that means hitting it. So there's this force, the spiritual force that's in touch with the material vegetation. Va'imerle, and as if, what is it communicating? It's saying, Gadel, grow. So what are you going to tell me? That the heavens and earth are not connected. If heavens and earth weren't connected, if the spiritual reality and the material reality had nothing to do with each other, we wouldn't exist. We only exist because we're powered by a higher force. So what does this mean? L'sha'ad matan teira ha'yonetek mechuvan. There was this, so to speak, this seeming schism, this seeming break. Gezeira, the Rebbe says, the word gezeira can mean a decree, or the word gezeira can also mean a cut. It was sliced apart, it was truncated. Shenimna mikeshazeli his galus. Yes, it was true. No, it couldn't be seen or felt or known. It was a reality, but a reality that we couldn't be aware of. Ubishas matan teira, when the Hashem decided it's time to give the Torah to the Jewish people, batla hagzeira. So then this division, this break all of a sudden dissipates. V'nitan hakoyach, now the ability, the wherewithal was given b'nivra hatachtein, in a creature living here on the face of earth, to see sharshay u'mekoyre ha'elyon, to see or to know and recognize his or her source on high. Gilui chodesh zeh, this new revelatory reality. Hakesher habilti emtzoi bin ha'ilum esatachteinim la'ilum esalyonim. This unbreakable and factual bond between the spiritual and the material realities. Ad kadei kach, so much so, sha'abriya kula enibalas kiyom atzmoi, that creation, that the cosmos shouldn't feel independent of the divine reality that enables them to exist. That they should feel or know each and every moment, b'chol rega v'rega, that there is kiyuma neveya me'habera, that their existence comes from the creator of heaven and earth, of the cosmos. Heyos hafta atzuma umarisha avur ha'olam. This was a shocking moment, a shocking realization for the material world. U'b'lashon hakasuf, in the language of David HaMelech, in the 68th Psalm of Tehillim, which quoted by the Sephardim, Eretz Rasha, earth trembled. Earth trembled because suddenly earth became aware. Earth wasn't aware till now. V'rash zeh, and this incredible, overwhelming awareness, sudden awareness. Hevi beifintivi l'kil subrakim. It brought naturally. So earth expressed itself. Nature expressed itself. Nature was as if shouting, screaming. It was like exploding with this awareness. And it exploded into lightning and thunder.
Was this being broadcast around the world, or is this like just isolated to Sinai?
That's an excellent question. So, as a rule, there was something that happened in the whole world, at least in the eastern hemisphere of the world, in that half of the globe. But the nations of the world didn't exactly see or hear or know this. It was expressed primarily at Mount Sinai. And that's why we said that Hashem coming down to Mount Sinai, and Mount Sinai being the Tachton, and Hashem being the Elyon, right? That's heaven and earth are meeting. So that's where the meeting point was, and therefore that was where the convulsing, nature was convulsing, where at the moment, or at the spot, if you will, of this connection, of that nexus. And that's why there was lightning and thunder. Deba says, Kishem, an example. Sha'adam maven lepeta rayan chadash. A person, all of a sudden, it hits him. Something he never knew before. An overwhelming awareness. So what happens sometimes when people all of a sudden become aware of something? They get news, shocking news. What happens? They scream. People yell. They flip out. Well, nature flipped out. The world flipped out when it suddenly became aware of this truth that for all this time was hidden. Now it became revealed. That, my friends, is what lightning and thunder is all about. So in other words, ask the question differently, Nathan. Don't ask if the people knew. Did earth know? Did vegetation know? Did the mineral world know? Did the animals sense and understand that something massive had changed? And the answer is yes. And nature understood it so profoundly and was so aware of it that it actually proverbially screamed. Nature was screaming. And that screaming, that shaking of the very foundations of our material existence that expressed itself in the lightning and the thunder. So now we have an understanding as to why the lightning and thunder was symptomatic of the bigger meaning of what Matan Torah represents and was all about.